The Athletic.
Hello, welcome back to 1874, a podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. Villa picked up a point on the road at Brighton on Saturday, largely thanks to Emi Martinez. Today, we're going to look back at that, look forward to Leicester on Sunday, and look at the sad year with no fans at Villa Park. Joined as ever by The Athletic's Aston Villa writer, Greg Evans. And Greg, probably one of your least favourite trips of the season at the weekend, I'm imagining.
Yeah, hello Dan. Really disappointing day, actually, whole weekend. It's one of the games I really look forward to, Brighton away. I think it's a good weekend down there. You know, I usually stay over and meet up with some fans and go and have a drink and stuff. But it was just so different this year. You know, we drove down there, stayed over. I was the only person in the hotel, which was a weird experience in itself. And then the game was really poor as well, wasn't it? You know, to call the way down there for a 0-0 draw for Villa to pretty much offer nothing going forward. It was probably the first game I've actually come away from thinking I was really disappointed in Villa because I just thought they offered nothing, really. Just a disappointing weekend all around, really.
It's quite bizarre, wasn't it? Because like you say, I think every game so far this season, and we're over halfway now, I think Villa have offered an attacking threat in the games we've lost. You've come away and thought, oh, unlucky there. We were really in that game. If decisions had gone our way, if we'd been a bit more clinical or defended better, we'd have come away with something, but we still played well. But Dean Smith said below bang average. And I think that's probably a little bit kind in fairness, because I think a Ross Barkley rolled one into the goalkeeper's arms, and that's pretty much the only shot I can remember in the whole game. It was a really uninspiring evening from Villa.
Yeah, there wasn't really much, in terms of attacking, you know, play, really. I wouldn't say attacking intent. Villa certainly tried to attack. They just couldn't really muster up anything. And I think when you look back to the games that Villa lost, you know, look, even that Leeds game that was, you know, the most... Yeah, dismal sort of performance and result overall. You look, Villa still had four or five good chances, didn't they? If you think of it, the Brighton game, there was just nothing there. I mean, I suppose you've got to give the opposition a little bit of credit as well. I think Brighton have come into some decent form. I never thought I'd say this because I remember watching Dan Burn when he was a Birmingham City player, but I actually think he's a really good, valuable asset now, and I'd quite like him in the team. I don't think he fit into the Villa team, but I think, you know, if you're a fan of his, if you support the team that he plays for, I think you'd quite like to like, you'd learn to like him. And he caused a few problems from set pieces, didn't he? And he had Martinez pulled off a couple of decent saves from him. And I think we just got to give Brighton a little bit of credit and appreciate how hard they made it for Villa. And hopefully now we'll see an improvement, really, in the game ahead. I think probably the most disappointing thing for Villa was that they had 7 full days off and we expected to see a bit of vibrancy and a bit of verve, but there just wasn't anything there, was there?
Yeah, we'll come back to the days off. Do you think, with you saying Brighton deserve credit, you were at the game, so you've had a unique view compared to us watching on TV. Was it a case of Brighton just had a good game plan and shut Villa down, or was it Villa were rubbish, or was it a bit of both? I mean, Brighton, to be fair to them over recent weeks, they'd had a good month. We spoke about that last week, and they've kind of done a little bit what Villa did after lockdown, in that they've realised that they can't keep shipping goals, and they've really solidified, and their defensive record's been really good over the last 5 or 6 games. So what was it a case of?
Yeah, well, I thought first and foremost, they kept it very tight. I thought they were well organised and quite disciplined in their defence, and Bissouma as the holding midfielder. I thought Bissouma sort of was probably given a little bit of too much of a free role to do what he wanted and dictate the play. Now, I'm not solely blaming Ross Barkley for that, because, you know, the responsibility is for other players as well to close him down. I just think he was given a little bit too much room to start off attacks, and then Brighton sort of moved forward with ease from there. And as I say, I think you just got to give credit to their flair players. You know, McAllister looked quite decent. Gross did well in the middle, moving the ball efficiently and quickly. And then they were a real threat from set pieces every time. And corners, something doesn't sit quite right with me still with Villa at corners. I feel like they're always looking a little bit vulnerable. They tend to have like the 3 blockers, I think Dean Smith calls them, watching the runners coming in. And it felt like a bit of a mismatch again, because it was Louise and Barkley marking Dan Byrne, and he had a couple of headers that almost punished Villa. But look, you know, it's another point, isn't it? And it's a point that takes Villa over their points tally from the whole of last season. And the fact that they've got 16 games left to, you know, improve on last season's tally shows that it's not so bad. And although, you know, we're talking a bit doom and gloom here, it was another point, wasn't it? And that was probably a game last year that Villa might have gone and lost, to be fair.
It's arguably one of Villa's greatest points of the season, just because they were so, so bad. And I never actually felt like Brighton were going to score. I know that sounds stupid because they had a number of shots and Emi Martinez has made 9 saves, but I actually think they're a good team. They haven't really got any end product. They're defended well, but a few of the players, when you Trossard, McAllister, they're nice footballers, good footballers, but they haven't really got any end product. So I was still going into the last 10 minutes thinking, Villa are going to nick this. We'll just get one chance. Watkins or Grealish will do something and we'll end up nicking it 1-0. And I know that didn't happen, but Martinez made 9 saves, but relatively comfortable, would you say?
No, I wouldn't actually. I felt that there was, being at the game, I felt that Brighton were going to score at some point. That's how I felt.
Okay.
Of course, there's always that threat when you've got Grealish in the team. It was an off game for him, wasn't it? And unfortunately, yeah. When Grealish doesn't play as well as he normally does, the team seemed to suffer, which is probably the same as any team with a star player, isn't it? You look at Messi last night for Barcelona. When he doesn't turn up, it seems that, you know, the team struggle. And yeah, I don't know. I think you're giving Trossard and McAllister a bit of tough love there, Dan, to be honest. I think Trossard's been quite unlucky this season. I think he's the only the player who's hit the bar, who's hit the woodwork more often than anybody. You know, him and Ollie Watkins both right up there. So I think it's fine margins and he's quite close to becoming a very decent player, actually.
Got to hit the target, Greg.
Well, you haven't. Got to hit the target. To be fair, yeah, but I think there's not much. He's not far off it, actually. I think he could be a decent player.
No. I get what you say. No, he's a lovely footballer. Him and McAllister both lovely, but I've watched Brighton a few times and, as I say, end product not really there. So I just felt Villa were going to nick it. I mean, basing that on absolutely nothing going forward, because as we've said, we're absolutely rubbish. But just the longer it went on, 0-0, I've seen Brighton a few times, ship goals late. I just felt like Villa would do something. And you spoke about Grealish. I mean, an off game for Grealish is miscontrolling the ball once or twice, which I think is probably the first time he's done that all season, and he did it on Saturday. But when he is shut down or he's having a difficult night, you need other players to step up. And it didn't really happen. I mean, I think you can excuse Watkins because, you know, not much service, not a lot going on. He's up against big, strong centre-backs. I don't remember him having a shot in the game, correct me if I'm wrong. So I think we can discount him because sometimes as a striker, you're only as good as the service you get. Barkley's the one that's coming under fire. I mean, in some ways, I think criticising anyone after a bad team performance and singling out individuals is not really for me. But Barkley seems to be the one that he's now getting that scapegoat tag. You wrote about it after the game. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I'm going to go against the grain a little bit here, and I presume some supporters who are getting on his back at the moment are going to disagree with me. But I watched him closely because at Brighton, the way the press box is set up at the moment is you're right at the back of the stand in the side stand, so you've got like a really, you know, an elevated view. It's quite a nice view, actually. You can sort of, you know, get a real good analysis of the game. So I decided to watch Barkley closely because the plan that I had going into the game was that I was going to write about him, hoping that he had a good performance. But, you know, it didn't work out for him. I think what we can all say is that he isn't performing at the level that we know he can, right? So when he came into Villa at the start, brilliant against Liverpool, everyone was singing his praises. I actually think his best game was the one against Arsenal. I think he was, you know, the man of the match there. Without him in those games, Villa don't get those wins. I think it's simple as that.
I take you talk about the away game.
Sorry, the away game. The 3-0. Started off really well. Picks up the injury. Out for 2 months. Disappointing, obviously. Desperately wants to come back. Has played 6 games in 18 days. Those 6 games, not really at the level that he would have wanted to be. Clearly the frustration is there with him. You know, he wouldn't come off. He was substituted in the last 7 games. He wouldn't come off the pitch and kick the water bottle, would he? Kick the bottle carrier thing if he wasn't frustrated. So look, there's some frustration there. But I think the lazy tag that he's been given is unfair.
I agree.
I mean, look, Villa knew what they were getting with Ross Barkley, right, when they signed him on loan. They knew the type of player he was going to be. I've never once in all the years that Ross Barkley's been playing associated him as a player who presses defenders at speed and regular. I've never seen him do that, right? So I'm not sure what Villa supporters are expecting of him. So the criticism that seems to be labelled at him is that he doesn't press defenders. Well, he does, because I watched him. I watched him all game and he does. He just doesn't do it at the speed of, say, an Ollie Watkins does.
Not many do, to
be
fair.
And as you say, yeah, you know, Ollie Watkins is very different in the way he does. So when you look at the positions that Barkley and Watkins take up in the game, there's not much difference between the two in terms of how advanced they are in the pitch. So you're effectively looking at Barkley as a second striker, you know, almost a striker. So, I mean, look, he's 27 years old now. I mean, he's not going to change his game. The way that Barkley will help Villa going forward is getting him on the ball, driving at defenders, linking up the play like he did to great effect in the early games. And I think what we've also got to remember is if he's been out for 2 months with a hamstring injury, he's moved to Villa on loan from Chelsea because he desperately wants to play and get into the England team. If he's got that worry of a niggling hamstring injury, is he going to be charging at defenders at speed, doing something that he's never done in his career anywhere? And changing up his game. There were a few times during the game at Brighton where Dean Smith was shouting, work, 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 to Ross and a few of the other players. I think it wasn't an instruction directly aimed at Barkley because he wasn't doing the work. I think that's just what Smith says to the players anyway. You know, he wants to see that quick press. But the situation that we've got now is whether Barkley stays in the team, isn't it, going forward? And whether Sanson comes in or whether Jacob Ramsey comes in and replaces him and Barkley has to find his way back into the team. But I just think for Villa, they need to find a way to get him on the ball. If he can get on the ball, he will cause problems. Against Brighton, against West Ham, he couldn't get on the ball, so he's not going to cause any problems.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
There was problems in midfield on Saturday night, undoubtedly. I'm talking about the whole midfield. So, like you say, he didn't really get the ball. He needs quick passes into him so he can manipulate space and drive at defences. And that didn't happen for whatever reason. On Saturday, I think you raise a valid point with the off the ball. I think Villa are 4-4-2, basically, off the ball. And as you say, Watkins and Barkley are close together. It's clearly Watkins' job to press in those situations. And I bet if you go back to the games when Barkley was out and Jack was playing as a 10, I bet you Jack wasn't pressing in the same situations that Ross isn't pressing with such intent. I bet if you look back, I've not done it, but I bet if you look back, it'll be very similar. It's clearly a tactical instruction. That's what Watkins is there for, because that's his game. That's what he can do. I think the criticism's a bit over the top. I mean, you look back to the Southampton game. Again, he wasn't brilliant. We won that game 1-0 thanks to him. Great ball from Grealish, but that's a fantastic header that not many other players in the team would have been capable of. We've won that game because of him. He's a game changer. He's a match winner on his day. Villa have got to find a way to get him back up to peak level. And I think the only way of doing that, Greg, is by continuing to play him, because I think he's a player that with a run of games will hit his premium level. If you stick him on the bench and he has a game off, I think you're sending him backwards, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a difficult one now, isn't it? Because he's got those minutes in his belt, under his belt. He's, you know, he's got those 7 games on the bounce, albeit didn't complete any of them. So, you know, he's almost right there now. And you'd think with the games now being staggered more on weekends rather than midweek, weekend, midweek, weekend, this might benefit him because he's going to get a little bit more time on the training ground.
Yeah.
And I think if we just look at the bigger picture as well, I think if you take Ross Barkley out of the team, if Aston Villa hadn't had Ross Barkley this season, they would have fewer points.
Oh, definitely.
I'm convinced of
that.
Yeah,
I agree.
They would have fewer points than they have now. So let's appreciate what he's done for the team so far. Absolutely no issue with people having a go at criticising players or asking them to do more or expecting more of them. No problem at all. That's what football's about, isn't it? You know, if we just dressed every footballer up as the same and spoke nicely about them, there would be no opinions in this game and it'd be boring. But yeah, you know, Barkley will know that he needs to do more. And I think everybody watching is expecting a little bit more of him. And as I say, the big decision now is whether he plays, isn't it, against Leicester? Because I was really impressed with Sansón. Okay, he only had 15 minutes, but he looked lively and very, very fast as well. So he could add that little bit of a different dimension.
Yeah, I think it's going to be slow integration for him. Let's look ahead to Leicester now. I mean, you talk about games where Villa would have less points if it wasn't for Ross Barkley. Leicester away. Absolutely, that game was petering out for a 0-0 without Ross popping up with an absolute screamer in stoppage time. So Villa have got the chance to do the double over a very good side like they did against Arsenal. Villa go into the home game at Villa Park with a chance to do the double, Greg.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a triple, isn't it, as well? Almost, it would be three wins on the bounce, the same as what yeah. Arsenal ended up to be. And, you know, it's some achievement, really, when you think of where Villa were a couple of years ago in the Championship, languishing in fifth place, you know, struggling to get up through the playoffs and then just surviving last year. You know, to be coming up and beating these established Premier League clubs now regularly is a big thing. And I have to admit, I hate to sound downbeat on this one, but I think it's going to be a really tough one for them on Sunday. I think.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that I watched the Liverpool-Leicester game and I thought that Liverpool were totally in control for 80 minutes and I was surprised how they let it go. But it just shows what Leicester have got, that they can do that to teams now and just turn it on. And they've got game changers in there, haven't they? Harvey Barnes and Vardy, obviously. The issue that Leicester have got is that there's a fair few injuries. You know, they're obviously in Prague, aren't they, on Thursday night. And Perez is now out. Ricardo isn't travelling because they want to keep him fresh for hopefully for Sunday. I think Justin's injured, isn't he, for the season?
Yeah, he's out for the season.
Farner's out as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, they've got some issues. And if you think of if Villa lost four key players like that, you know, Matty Cash is going to be out, of course, but if they'd have lost four players like that, it'd be really hard for them to rebuild, wouldn't it, and replace. So might be a good time to play them, but I just think they've got a lot of good quality and it's going to be tough.
I'm a bit the opposite of you. Again, we talk about people having different opinions. I watched Leicester closely. I watched the game on Saturday against Liverpool. And you think about it, Liverpool were in control, 1-0 up. They score a goal off a set piece, which obviously they can do with Maddison. The second goal was a horrific goalkeeping error. I mean, I'm probably absolutely jinxing it here, but you'd hope Emi Martinez isn't going to do something like that against Leicester on Sunday. And the third goal, again, just kind of like Liverpool are pushing on the break and that they hit the third. But I don't think they created too much. I thought they were very solid. I think Leicester might let Villa have the ball, sit back a little bit and try and play on the break. I think that's what they want, and hopefully Villa will be wise to it. But I didn't see anything that particularly scares me on Saturday. Maybe Barnes up against El Mohamedy, who hasn't played a lot of football this season, would be one that people would call out. And Vardy's obviously got a great record against Villa as well. But I think with the added factor of the Europa League fatigue, we've already beaten Leicester. We've proved we can beat them. They're going to have a patched up defence. I think, again, as well, another thing, there's a reaction from this Villa side when things go badly in a game before. And I fancy us.
Yeah, no, do you know what? I don't disagree with a lot of what you've said there, to be honest. But I also think that, I just think that Leicester, the fact that they weren't
great team.
The fact that they weren't very good against Liverpool and then still went and well, not smashed them, but still went and beat them 3-1. I think that they can change a game very quickly now with their individuals. And they showed that, yeah, I watched the game on silent, actually, no commentary. I don't know what they were saying about the game, but my opinion was that Liverpool were totally in control for 80 minutes and then it just changed at the end. But that's the threat that they've got, haven't they? But in some ways, Villa are a similar team like that because they can keep it tight and then they've got the quality to go and hurt teams with Grealish, Watkins quickly on the break and Traore, who I was disappointed with, to be honest. We haven't mentioned him yet, have we? But he was underwhelming, wasn't he, against Brighton?
I didn't think the ball went down his side, to be honest. I don't remember us going down the right-hand side and attacking for whatever reason. I just thought he didn't get the ball, quite simpler.
But yeah, I mean, but neither did Barkley. And Barkley, everybody's criticising Barkley. I mean, what was the difference?
Mm.
Do you know, what was the difference between Grealish, Barkley and Traore?
Not much.
The three of them hardly got the ball. Villa need to find a way to get the forward players on the ball more. And if they do, they're going to hurt teams. Simple as that.
What do you think of the makeup of the midfield for that game? Then do you think there'll be changes? Because people are Louise, to be fair, Louise and McGinn are coming in for criticism in some quarters. I mean, no player is going to play well every single week. And I think criticising Louise and McGinn, who've been playing defensive midfield all season, probably going against their natural games a little bit, have done a great job for this a side that's been very good defensively. So I think if you're looking for stuff from them going forward, I don't think you're going to get it because of the system. But I think they've protected the back four very well. But what do you make of the makeup of the midfield?
I mean, I like it. I think it's good. I think that I would always say that it's a risk not playing McGinn.
Yeah, I would play him every week.
You know, I'd always play him because I just think... I just think he turns up, you know, and he can just turn it on. I feel like if I was the manager, I'd be too scared to drop him in case he has one of them brilliant games. And, you know, you know he's just capable of doing that at any given moment. So I'd stick with it, to be honest. I mean, I'd even continue with Barkley. I know people are going to disagree with me with that one, but I'd stick with it. And see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I think that I might be completely incorrect here that every game the Canberra started, we've kept a clean sheet. I could be wrong.
Certainly the last. I don't
Burnley.
Think Burnley. He certainly the Burnley, Newcastle and Arsenal. Yeah, the three that he's come in, he didn't play earlier in the season, did he? So no. Yeah. I think that's correct.
So people are calling for that.
But Villa kept 12 clean sheets this season. Do you know what I mean? They've kept eight without him.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an issue. I don't think they're particularly porous, are they? You know, they're not conceding lots of goals and chances and shots at goal. I don't think that's the issue. I think they need to get the forward players on the ball more. That's all. Does Nakamba do that job? I mean,
no.
if you bring Nakamba in for Louise or Nakamba in for McGinn, does that help get the forwards on the ball quicker? I don't think it does.
I agree.
I think that's the issue at the moment. I think that was the issue in the last game. They just couldn't get the ball forward to the creative players to cause a problem. And if you take out Louise, look at the Brazil team, for example, Luiz gets in there in a slightly more advanced role and Alan doesn't of Everton. Okay. So, and the reason for that is because Alan's this type of destroyer player and we know what he's going to do. He's going to win tackles more often. But with Luiz, when he gets on the ball, he can give you that bit more variety. You know, he can play different passes. He can dribble the ball forward a bit better than others. So if you take that out of the team and replace him, it might backfire. I don't know. Look, you know, it's one to weigh up, isn't it? And I'm sure Smith will be looking at his options in training this week.
Yeah, I think McGinn and Louise, their game's obviously not about being destroyers. They're about interceptions in midfield. And I think both of them have done that job really well all season. The Canberra probably suited Arsenal because Villa were quite happy to let Arsenal have the ball and break. I think Leicester are going to be quite happy to let Villa have the ball and they try and break. So I wouldn't say it's a game for Nakamba. I think there's you pick and choose your games for Marvellous to come in. And for me, that's not really one of them. As I say, Arsenal was ideal for him. Newcastle was kind of out of necessity. There wasn't really anyone else to pick at the time. So I think you pick and choose. But I think McGinn and Louise do a lot of stuff defensively. In the system we're playing goes completely unnoticed. People want all bells and whistles going forward. And in that defensive midfield role with Louise and McGinn now, you're not going to say that. You might argue it's their natural game, curtail, but that's the system we're playing. It's worked for the majority of the season. If we go a few more weeks and it's not working and we're not picking up results, then okay, look at a change. But at the moment, I think you leave it as it is, as you say. So, Greg, let's talk about you. Probably not your favourite subject, but let's talk about what you've been up to with your pieces at the moment.
It's been a slow week at the moment, actually. I've been going match to match. Done a piece on Villa's exciting young winger, Jadon Philogene Bidassi. So a little bit more.
Good pronunciation.
I hope it's right. A little bit more about him. So obviously his contract expires at the end of the season. So I won't share all the details right now, but that'll be up online on Thursday. So, you know, it's really interesting, really, because he's one of the most exciting players in the under-23 team. And you know, there are a lot of clubs in Europe looking at him. So if he doesn't stick around at Villa, which, you know, he still might do, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens next. So, yeah, big story on him for Thursday.
Yeah, it might be some Champions League teams that are looking at that young lad at the moment. And the Champions League has returned this week, and there's no better time to sign up for all the Athletic's coverage. Until February the 25th, we're offering new subscribers a half-price annual subscription. That's less than £1 a week for an entire year. So to redeem that, all you've got to do is a limited-time offer, is go to theathletic.com/VillaPod, and you'll be enjoying basically really, really good coverage. There's some excellent stuff being in there all round at the moment. I think there's a Kevin Keegan thing up there at the moment, which I haven't read yet, that's supposed to be really good. So yeah, watch out for all the content. And if you're enjoying the show at the moment, please leave us a review, because Greg, I think both of us are enjoying doing it. And there's plenty of interaction on social media at the moment with this podcast as well, which is really, really good. I like speaking to all the people that listen to the show and take it in, and not more so than yesterday when we put out there the top three. So you tasked me with picking my top three strikers at Villa of the Premier League era. Now, we've chosen the Premier League era because, despite how I'm looking at the moment in lockdown, I am still quite young. I've only watched football in the Premier League era, so it's difficult for me to go back and choose people like Andy Gray and Peter Witt, because I never saw them play. Greg's the same. Greg's even younger than me, would you believe it? So yeah, none of us have ever seen those kind of players play. So Premier League era it is. And I've got to be honest, Greg, to narrow it down to three was really hard. There's one banker, and then after that, it's really difficult.
Sport for choice, aren't they, really, with Villa strikers? I mean, there's been some absolute belters over the years. I'm looking forward to you picking there, Dan.
Yeah, I think you could guess the first pick. So this was when...
Yeah, Dwight, I think we all agree on this one, don't
Dwight York has to be in there. He set the standard for strikers, didn't he, for Villa? When I was a kid, he set the standard, and he's only really been recently that anyone's really matched up to those levels. They've gone through years of poor number nines. You did a piece on the cursed number nine shirt, didn't you? And there's nothing been there for the last decade, really. That shirt number seems to be cursed. So go back and read that if you haven't read it already. But York, he was at 20 goal a season, man guaranteed, for 3 years in a row. Villa were finishing top four, actually, at one point under Brian Little. Fourth, fifth and seventh, I think we finished in his three seasons as the main striker at Villa. And he was somewhere near 20 in each and every one of those seasons. Went off to Manchester United and won the treble. A Premier League great, and for me, still the best striker I've seen in a Villa shirt. So he's a no-brainer. I don't know how much you saw of him, as I say, you're younger than me. Did you see much of York?
Yeah, no. I saw lots of him, and I've, you know, enjoyed interviewing him in the past. And his autobiography is amazing. You know,
I've read that.
Got to read that if you haven't. It's a really interesting, funny read. I mean, he certainly lived a lifestyle as well, didn't he? So, yeah, as well as enjoying it on the pitch, he enjoyed it off it as well. I think currently living in Dubai.
Yeah, he is. I saw an interview with him the other day.
Oh, right. Okay, fine. I missed out on that one. I've been trying to interview him for a while. So, but yeah, excellent player. You know, I think I've seen him a little bit more just because of my age when he was at United. Obviously, you know, winning all those cups and starring at the top of the Premier League. But yeah, brilliant striker.
So he was one, absolutely guaranteed. The second one, I ummed and ahed whether he should be in there, but then I just looked at his goal scoring record. I looked at the fact he was in such a poor side, and his goal scoring record was pretty much 1-2 for that time. And for me, over the last 10 to 15 years, there's been one of the most satisfying things I've seen in a Villa shirt was Benteke rising up in the air and powering a header into the back of the net. So I thought Benteke had to be there. And I thought back to what would my 11 be of Villa players that I've watched over the years. And it would be him and York up front. So Benteke had to be in the top three for me. One of more recent times. I mean, I don't know whether it's because we were so rubbish as well. Like, it was a good memory of having a good player at that time. But I think he has to be in there.
Yeah, I think with Benteke, the thing is, what many people forget because he's struggled since he left Villa, is that when he was at Villa and leaving, and when there was that release clause that needed to be matched, he could have gone to probably any team in world football and fitted into the squad, you know, and potentially gone into the starting lineup. He was that good. Every club was interested in him. You know, he was that good. He was brilliant, and he was young, and the European Championships were coming up. And it's sad, really, to see him, you know, fade away.
I hate it.
you know, we remember watching him for Villa and he was unbelievable. You know, you knew that he was always going to be good for a goal. As you say, I suppose, you know, as a supporter sitting in the stands for you, Dan, that would have been a satisfying feeling watching him jump up in the air and latch onto a cross because you always knew he was going to score.
I loved his little celebration as well.
And I used to like his penalties as well. Yeah, I used to like his penalties.
I liked his penalties in stoppage time against West Brom in front of the whole end. I certainly liked those ones. Very, very interesting penalty technique. I enjoyed that.
Number three?
I enjoyed his celebrations as well, Greg, with the fingers up in the air. It's simple, but it was just something that I liked. Number three, Greg, I haven't decided. there's a few contenders there. So I've narrowed it down to six people. Gabby, Angel, Dion Dublin, Tammy Abraham, Savo Milosevic and John Carew. It's really tight. I think Tammy is one that one of the listeners was insisting I choose Tammy because he's saying 25 goals in the Championship, Villarreal in the Premier League without that. And I think it's a valid point, but it being over one season, I don't think I can put him in. Gabby's obviously the club record goal scorer, sorry, in the Premier League, but he also had to spend a lot of time out wide, scored some important goals. So I'm leaning towards Gabby, to be honest. I haven't even mentioned Dean Saunders, the first striker I saw, really. In a Villa shirt.
Sport for choice, as we say, aren't we there?
It's difficult, I don't know. Tell me who you'd pick out of them, just out of interest, before I decide.
Definitely not Savo. I remember being at school, and every time he missed a chance in the playground, it was, oh, what a Savo.
Not fair on him.
Not picking him, no chance. Angel was good for a couple of seasons, wasn't he? Carew, did you mention John?
Yeah, Carew.
I used to like watching John Carew, but, you know. I don't know. It's a tough one. I think Saunders, actually. I'd probably go Saunders. Yeah.
I am going to go for... Oh, God. I can't choose. I'll go for Gabba. He's the record goal scorer in the Premier League, and he scored so many important goals for Villa. And I think you forget for a few seasons he was absolutely unplayable. It would have been easy to pick someone who's a bit more of a talisman, like Carew, but a lot of these strikers, Benteke included... Gabby was playing with them. So I'm going to go Gabba. Plus he always,
Yeah, look, I think that's fair, isn't it, Dan? Look, I mean, he's the record goal scorer in the Premier
League.
It's
tight,
though. For Villa. I mean, there was a spell where he's in the England team, wasn't he? Arsenal were interested in him when Arsenal were brilliant. You know, he was ripping defences apart. He scored a brilliant hat-trick. I remember that one year against Man City, was it?
Yeah.
We had some great seasons. We often forget, don't we, because it didn't end up great for him, you know, and the last few seasons, you know, I think, you know, in his own words, they weren't as productive as he would have liked them to have been.
Yeah.
And we almost forget how good he was at the start and how quick he was. And the fact that he was born in Erdington, I mean, look, you know, everyone loves a local hero more than anything, don't they? So, yeah, I'll back you with that choice, to be fair.
I think injuries hurt him. I think people actually forget. I interviewed him recently. Injuries curtailed him in a number of ways. He had to adapt his game and change his game. And his body just couldn't put up with the injuries he was getting anymore. So, yeah, he's also very generous with his likes on Instagram. So I'll go with I'll go with Gabba. Let's move on now to no fans at Villa Park for a year, Greg. I just read your piece and it's horrible, really. I can't believe I've not been to Villa Park for a year. So now we're recording the podcast. It's a year and one day, I think, since fans were at Villa Park for that Spurs game. I mean, God, I remember walking away that day and thinking, we are finished. Mm-hmm. You cannot defend like that and stay up. The Engels' mistake in stoppage time, letting Son through for them to win 3-2. And Villa had actually played well that day, in fairness. But to have not been back there since... It's not right.
No, it's horrible. It's criminal almost to think that, you know, the fans haven't seen the new players. And, you know, I wrote in my piece, imagine the roar from the halt end the first time Emi Martinez walks up to it and, pre-game and that first goal that's scored. And just seeing this hard-working new bunch of, you know, industrious players, but players that really believe in the team, love playing for the football club. And, you know, they're all pulling together, trying to you know, achieve something special, really, and potentially get into Europe. Okay, might be a little bit too hard for them to do that this season, but yeah, it just feels like it's such a shame that the fans are missing out. You know, I did make it clear in my piece that we can't really say whether Villa are better or worse without supporters at the moment. I know it's a bit of a I know it's not the right real tone to strike, but
it's an interesting debate. I think
it's happening, isn't it? It's real. You know, it's real. There are no fans in there, and you know there are no fans going to be in there for the foreseeable future. So you know, it's a big talking point. As we've seen over years, if you speak to a lot of players, they will all tell stories of times where you know themselves or their teammates have been heckled by certain sections of the support base, and that goes against them. It makes it hard to sometimes turn up and play your best football. And what you've got to think of at the moment is, there's 11 players out there. Well, okay, there's a match day 18 that are all pulling together as one with no external factors.
Yeah.
Coming into the game, if you know what I mean. There's 18 of them that are setting up every single week, knowing that they've got to get the better of the other 18. It's as simple as that, whether they're home or away. You know, there's nothing in the surroundings that are making it any different for them. So
they're in a bubble.
That's it. Yeah, you know, the bubble has been used a lot, hasn't it, in the last 12 months? But they are in that bubble, and it's going to be very different when supporters come back, because there's going to be 40,000 screaming voices scrutinising you every single move. Now, some players like Jack Grealish will thrive off that. It's quite scary to think that he could go up a level when when supporters are back. And I think some of the other players probably could as well. You know, probably McGinn and Barkley, they're probably players that would go up another level as well with supporters in. But you potentially could look at others, not just at Villa, but across the country, that might suffer when, you know, the pressure's really on them. So it's an interesting debate, isn't it? It's one we shouldn't be having, and one, you know, it's sad that it's come to this, but, you know, because of the whole COVID situation, but it's a valid debate, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading through the reader comments. There's a couple of different opinions, and there's some really good stuff in the comments on your articles. And we should say as well at this point, those fans that we're talking about that might turn, that's a minority. The majority totally go there to support the team and get behind them, and especially at away games, there's some unbelievable people at away games. It is just that minority. But John JB in the comments, he's saying it's the same everywhere. He's saying it's the same everywhere. He's saying Stoke, at one point, they were happy just to stay up. Fans were all behind Pulis, whatever happened. But expectations raise, which makes people change. I thought that was a really valid point. Leicester now, when the fans are back in, they've got, like he's saying, they've got an expectation now of being this top six side. And if they weren't there, fans would grumble. So it's interesting, isn't it, that the standards, they change.
Yeah, totally. I really like that comment from John, I think, wasn't it? And I thought he made some really valid points, and he's right, you know, totally right. The fact that for Villa, for example, they finished sixth 3 years on the bounce under Martin O'Neill, and then, you know, Randy Lerner almost left the players and the manager exposed a little bit then, because he gave up on the club almost, and the high expectations that the previous teams and the previous managers had set, it made it hard for the new ones coming in. So
yeah,
the good thing about the comments is I think they're always very reasonable. Yeah, some people disagree with the things that are right. Some people agree with them. You know, I love it when people flag up things that they think are different, or that if they've got their own opinion. You know, as I say, it's what makes football great, isn't it? That we can, you know, discuss these things, and just because I write something doesn't mean that it's right. You know, that's my opinion, and lots of other supporters will have different opinions, and that's what makes starting lineups all the better, all the more interesting, doesn't it? Because everyone's got a different plan. But yeah, look, it's been a long year. You know, a year out of a year with no supporters. It's been a sad, long, painful year.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, I think when Emi Martinez runs to the whole end, and I'm actually sat there, I think for the first time, I think I might cry. I feel emotional at the thought of going back, because I've been going since I was seven and never had a break like this. Obviously, I've had a season ticket since then, so I've never had a break of not going. So this is like a weird stage in my life, and it's probably affected my mental health a little bit, if I'm being completely honest, and it will have done a lot of Villa fans as well, because it's routine. It's something I've done with my dad every 2 weeks since I was seven. So it is affecting me not being there. It's just not the same watching it on TV, and it won't be the same for you going to the games and there being no one there, and you just sat on your own in a press box as well. It's just really weird times, and it does just feel like it's not any time soon that I'm going to be back there as well. So it's just, it's really hard.
Yeah, and I think a lot of supporters will resonate with you, Dan. You know, it's tough, isn't it? Because, you know, look, I'm lucky I get to go to the games, but there are other things that I'm missing in the world right now, you know. And that that regular visit to stadiums to watch football is, you know, it's on a lot of people's calendars, isn't it? And it's something that they look forward to after a long week at work.
I know. I mean, I think at some point I'm going to have to put on my Greg Evans costume and borrow your pass and make my way down to Villa Park and see if we can get away with it. You can still do the written piece, but I might have to get the Greg Evans disguise on at some point because I need to be back there and I need it. Even if I could just go to one game, I really just think that would make me feel better. Even if they lost 5-0 at Villa Park to Leicester on Sunday and I was there, I think I'd feel better. I don't know. Really, really strange times, and us going back cannot come soon enough. I think that does us for this week. Greg, been great to chat to you. Some interesting stuff there, actually, that I think we've gone through and discussed. Do you want to just say something about the quiz that's tomorrow at the time of recording?
Yeah. Last chance to sign up to the quiz tomorrow. It's to support Prostate Cancer UK. We've got lots of sign-ups already, so you might even see me drinking a pint of beer if you're lucky. So a signed shirt to win and £1,000 if you can go on to the grand final and win that. So, yeah, should be a lot of fun, and I think even you can answer the questions, Dan.
Oh, mate, I'm backing myself on a quiz. Don't you worry about that. I'm going all out for the win, and I remembered to sign up this morning, so I finally signed up as well. So I am legally allowed in the quiz now because I have signed up using the registration form on The Athletic. Thanks ever so much for listening as well, and again for all your interaction on social media. We both really enjoy conversing with you, so keep that up, please, and let us know if there's anything you want to hear in the podcast as well. This is a podcast for The Athletic subscribers, the Aston Villa fans. We want to talk about things that you want to know about, so let us know if there's anything you'd like to hear from Greg and myself. We'll be back next week to dissect Villa's game with Leicester. Stay safe. Up the Villa.
The Athletic.